I would like to introduce our speaker for tonight. It's Lawrence from Chula Vista. Not Larry, huh?
Not Larry. That's all right. Thanks, sir.
Good evening, everyone. My name is Lawrence. I am an alcoholic. Yeah. Congratulations to everyone that took time, especially my good friend Matt. Me and him showed up here roughly around the same time. And I first met him when we were both doing H&I at the, what's that place called? No, the VOA. Yeah, that was a great place to go do H&I, man. It was a detox facility in National City, just hardcore, right? Like we used to go there twice a week and it was amazing. That was like right away I started doing stuff like that because the people that I leaned on, the people that brought me here to you guys, they really encouraged stuff like H&I, like sponsorship and going to meetings regularly, all the stuff that we say to do around here, I started doing right away because I was sick. I got here, I was a sick man. My sobriety date is November 17th, 2016. So hopefully everything goes good tonight. And if it does, I'll have 8 years when I wake up tomorrow. Yeah. No fronts, right, Bernie? I feel like I'm good for it, though. Yeah. I really wanted to say first is thank you to the South Bay Fellowship. I know that over the past 8 years, I haven't always like been the best member. But I want you guys to know that I love you so much, and I would not be this thing here now if it weren't for you. You guys have been so patient with me. I was a very sick man when I got here, and really just by example, like Floyd, like all the old timers here, my father, my mother, Bernie, like everybody that plugged in, you guys really showed me by example what a man of AA should be. And I've been paying attention. You know, I know it might not always have looked like I've been paying attention, but you guys really paved the way. And I owe you my life, actually. So thank you. November 17th, 2016. That was the day I checked into the Freedom Ranch. And for 3 days before that, I was holed up in a hotel room in IB, and I was detoxing. So I tried to get admitted to the Freedom Ranch 3 days before that, and they wouldn't take me. I sat down, and the man was like, "So, you know, when was the last time, you know, you drank?" And I was like, "I'm drunk, bro." And he was like, no, man. Like, we're not a detox, dude. You got to sober up at least for 3 days. And I was like, oh, my God. That was, like, such bad news because I could not scrape together a day. Luckily, my mom was there with me. And she was like, just come back to the house, and you can detox there. And I was like, no, you don't understand. He's there. Like, I can't be around him. Such a weird thing, man. Like, I'll get into it a little bit, but, like, I couldn't go anywhere near my father. Not like that. So she got me a hotel room, and I detoxed for 3 days. I went to the Freedom Ranch after 3 days. I sat down, and I was in really bad shape. I was seeing things. I was hearing things. It was bad. Like, it had been that way for a while, too. Like, I was kind of worried that I wasn't going to come back all the way this time. And there's been several times in my life where I thought like, oh, I did it this time. I did it this time. I'm going to stay like this now. And that was one of those times, man. And I was so scared. Like, we had looked up the Freedom Ranch. I'm going to talk a lot about the Freedom Ranch. I owe that place my life also along with this place. And I chose that place because of the name. Actually, You know, my mom was like, they have a golf course. It says they have a golf course. Like, there's like a petting zoo or whatever. There's like a farm. It's a dirt farm. It's not a farm. The golf course is like the most awful little mini golf course. It's not a golf course, dude. It's like a couple holes in the ground where we hit balls into. And I showed up there. And they gave me a copy of this book. They gave me two books. They gave me a copy of this book, not this book. This is a very special book I got tonight, actually. Gave me a hard copy of the big book. And they gave me a copy of the 12 and 12. And he like handed it to me, and I took it. And when I saw the big book, I went, oh, man, are you serious, dude? You guys do AA here? If I had known that, I would not have gone. I'll tell you that right now. And the reason is because I was not an alcoholic. I was not an alcoholic. Maybe an addict, maybe. But an alcoholic, no, definitely not. But I had had so much pain. And I was in such bad shape, I had no fight left in me. I took the books, I was like, whatever. He intook me, and I was shot out, man. I went and I climbed into another man's bed. He was not happy about that. He like woke me, I fell asleep right away. He woke me up and he was like, hey man, you're my bed, dude. You gotta get out of my bed. I was like, oh, I'm sorry. Got out of his bed. And that's what started my journey here. Actually, so what led me to that place was I was hiding in some bushes. I was not living there. I still had a home. I was hiding there. That was my last debauch, basically. But before I get into that, I did want to start off by reading one thing. I feel like this is important to start like this. This is from our book, and this is kind of like how I feel today. The great fact is just this and nothing less, that we have had deep and effective spiritual experiences which have revolutionized our whole attitude toward life, toward our fellows, and towards God's universe. The central fact of our lives today is the absolute certainty that our Creator has entered into our hearts and lives in a way which is indeed miraculous. He has commenced to accomplish those things for us which we could never do by ourselves. I'm so grateful to be here tonight, man. Like, my life is completely changed from the man I was when I walked in here. The relationship I have with both my parents, the career that I have, came to me from inside these rooms. Everything good in my life has come to me from inside these rooms. I was like, outside the 9:30 every nighters meeting, I'd been laid off from my job, and a man walked up to me. He was actually sponsored by one of my sponsees, and he was like, hey Lawrence, how's it going, man? How's work? And I was like, no, it's not going good. Like, they laid me off again. Like, I'm so sick of painting houses, dude. Like, I can't do this anymore. And he's like, why don't you go work for my mother? She owns the company that I work for. I was like, all right, set me up with an interview. I went in, turned out she was the owner of Cut and Core, which is like concrete cutting, core drilling company here in San Diego, but they're union, they're local 89. So they sponsored me in. I have this amazing career. I'm a foreman for Hudson Safety Light, which is a safety traffic control company. I have a truck. It has a camera in it that I never think about. I go throughout my whole day and I never once think about that camera looking at me all day long. That's wild. Like, people are, I imagine, like, sometimes someone's like watching the monitor, looking at me when I'm driving. I'm just doing my job. I do an honest day's work. I go home. I do the right thing with my money. I save it. I'm putting my son's through college, right? I met my fiance here. I met a host of friends here. Like, everything good in my life has come to me from literally inside these rooms. So, the Freedom Ranch. I start getting like emotional, man, when I think about that time I was there. You know, I kind of hit a rough patch last year. my son, Lawrence, I was on the way to sit down with him and his mother, and he was going through it. He had gotten in some trouble in school for drinking, and he had someone underage with him. He was also underage, and he got kicked out of school as a senior in high school. Just killing it, dude. Super smart boy. And his mom called me on the way. My phone rang, and she was like, you better get your ass over here. I found Lawrence in the bathroom, and he's trying to hurt himself with a knife. So I went over there, and, you know, my ex-wife lives in Eastlake with her husband, and she has, like, a new baby, and they live there with my children, and good dudes, awesome guy. And I pulled up, I got out of the car, and Lawrence was just in a fetal position in front of the house, and I just was like, oh, my God, dude. And it's so funny, like, you know, I've been doing this for a little while at that point, so I'm kind of used to, like, walking into, like, chaos, you know, like, because I do a lot of 12-step work, and, like, I've been on a lot of wet 12-step calls, and, like, been at detoxes and hospitals and funerals, and so, like, I, you know, this is different, obviously, but I see him, and I'm like, okay, like, God's with me, right? So I'm like, just stay calm. You know, the old Lawrence would be like, this is your fault. I can't believe you let this happen. Just make everything worse, right? That's who I am. But now I'm this new person. I've been this new person for a little while now. So I'm like calm. I feel like, you know, okay, let's deal with this. And I walked up and his stepdad, he's so awesome. He's like, Lawrence, you just need to drink some water. Like, come on, drink some water. And he's like, leave me alone. So I pick the dude up and I throw him in my car and I take him to the hospital. Like, I know the play. I know the play, right? I pick him up, put him in the car, drive him to the hospital. They keep, this is during COVID, so, like, I can't, like, see him too much after that. They keep him for, like, what is 72 hours, something like 72-hour hold. And then after that, he transfers to, like, a mental health facility, an inpatient mental health facility. And, you know, he's kind of like me. Like, you get into a place like that, and it's kind of like, it's a weird feeling. I know some of us have been there. Like, you check into the hospital or a place like that, and there's this moment where you're like, oh, thank God that's over. You just feel a little safer, just for a minute. It's like a very strange comfort that you feel. And I talked to him while he was in there. He started to recover, and he got out. Now, I did not think that he was one of us. He did mention to me, you know, he started opening up, talking about, like, the way he drank, and it's definitely abnormal, right? I believe it's a genetic thing, so it makes sense why he's not able to really control the amount he drinks once he starts drinking. Dad, I don't understand what's going on. Like, I just start drinking. Before I know it, the whole thing's gone. I'm, like, smashed. I'm like, dude. But, I mean, I don't, you know, I'm not, you're an alcoholic. I'm just like, yo, that sounds familiar. So I started bringing him here. Like, I know what to do. Like, I don't think he's one of us. Maybe potential, maybe. You know, certainly not at the point I was when I showed up at the Freedom Ranch. Not at all. He's a kid, you know, like, he's probably drank, like, less than a handful of times. But those times were bad, obviously. But I brought him here. You know, I brought him to meetings where there were young people. And I brought him to the Sweat Lodge, where I found, like, a connection. You know, I just did what they did for me, what worked for me. Like, I was broken. He was broken, you know, and it was just amazing to see him recover, you know, like what could seldom be accomplished in a few months, you know, just like it just takes, you know, someone's desperate and they want it and they show up here and they start to see the connection we have with each other and our connection we have with a higher power. It's like they want it and you could just see it like, you could just see it like ignite inside him. And he's, that was like almost 2 years ago, and he's killing it now, killing it. Just the power of this in my family's life is astounding. You guys probably know my parents, Larry and Irene Jose. They have 40 years, close to 40 years, no fronts, 39 years, I guess, of sobriety. Yeah, they've been married for 50. Yeah. They got sober when I was 7. So yeah, like I remember what they were like. Yeah, I was gnarly, I guess. But man, when I showed up at the Freedom Ranch, if you had talked to me, it was like, oh dude, it was awful. You would not believe the stuff I saw growing up, man. That's why I drink like this. Come on. Just this really false, dishonest narrative of trauma that I told myself I had. And really an excuse for my like awful, disgusting, like antisocial behavior. None of it was true, man. None of it was true. It was at the time. I mean, it's like true if you believe it, I guess. But man, I lived my life like that. That was my truth for so long. Like, I grew up in an alcoholic home. I don't know how many times I said that. Man, you guys don't know, man. Both my parents were like addicts, dude. So like, let's go. Just what? You know? I had all these lies. I had all this trauma or whatever. I had all this like resentment and guilt and shame and like selfish behavior when I showed up at the Freedom Ranch. And I didn't know about any of it, dude. Like I thought it was all his fault. For real. For real. Dude, my dad was a Vietnam vet. Dude, you don't know what it's like, man. What? He got sober when you were 7. What are you talking about, dude? You know? Just couldn't no longer differentiate the true from the false. Legit. Everything was her fault. Everything was his fault. Everything was their fault. None of this is my fault, man. None of this. And they gave me the books. And I climbed into someone else's bed. That was the last time I did that, by the way. It's weird, man. Like, I haven't been back to the Freedom Ranch in a while. The landscape of recovery, such as it was, I believe, has changed a little bit. Is that fair to say? I could go on about why. It's really none of my business. But back then, I believe I did have a counselor. I believe I did. I saw him one time after like a few months and he was like, you good? I was like, yeah. He's like, all right, get out of here. No one ever asked me about my trauma. No one ever asked me to make a list of my triggers. They just didn't. No one taught me how to process my emotions. Like, we never processed anything really. All I'm saying is that at that time, 8 years ago, the sort of the clinical solution surrounding recovery had not like taken root in these places like this. That's all I'm saying. I don't have a ton of experience with that sort of a solution. A little bit maybe as a kid, but that's all I'm saying. It just wasn't around back then. What was around was this. There was a class every day for 4 hours. 4 hours, and a man named John D, right? I say his name because I owe that man my life. John D and his brother Mike D actually was running the place at the time. But John, his job was to stand at a podium just like this every day and read to us from this book for 4 hours. And that was recovery at the Freedom Ranch. That's what we did. We did other stuff too, like rake the dirt. That's what I did. We called them freedom lines. No. Serenity lines. That's what we call them, serenity lines. And they were like, Lawrence, you're going to rake serenity lines the entire time you're here. Because most of the time, like, you start at the bottom and you kind of work your way up in terms of work. And like, after a while, you're in the kitchen. They're like, nah, you, man. You're going to rake lines the entire time you're here. And I was like, cool, because I don't think I could do anything else anyway. Like, I'm just sitting there raking lines. After a while, I was kind of like writing my name in the dirt. And they're like, man, what are you doing? Just make the lines. I was like, all right. I hated it there. I hated it there. And I didn't go there to recover either. I didn't go there to like do AA for sure. I didn't go there to do any program. I went there to like get away from it all. It's in Campo. It's super far away. I'm like, okay, cool. That's like, I'm probably not gonna like, you know, bump into anyone I know there. Like, she's not gonna really like come visit me probably. I'm not gonna like knock on her door in the middle of the night there. So I feel like that's probably a good place for me to be just because of how far away it is. But man, for the first few weeks I was there, every night I was on that smoke pad at like 2 a.m. with a backpack with like a couple pieces of clothing in it, a pack of cigarettes and a lighter. And I'm just standing on the cement pad, just like, which way's west? Because if I just start walking west, I feel like eventually I'll get to the ocean. And then we can get busy again, you know? I figured, like, what do they got in these hills? Like, coyotes? Pfft. I've been camping. I know what's up. Just out of my mind. And every day in class, I sat there drawing, not paying attention at all. Didn't hear one word. Just like when I showed up here for the first time. Actually, tried to get sober once before this moment that I'm talking about. Got Bernie as my sponsor. Still was not an alcoholic. My dad, bless him, was like, oh, come on, let's just go hit up an AA meeting. Come on, come on. Bring me here to the Nooner. And I hated it. I'm sorry. I love you guys so much now. But back then, I hated you. I just did not like you guys. So why do you take so long to walk to the podium? I'm like sitting there like, oh, my God, dude, hurry up. Get to the podium. And like some of you are just like. My name is Bernie. I'm an alcoholic. I'm like, ugh. Oh, my God, dude. Hurry up. I didn't hear a word you said. My mind was so closed. At the Freedom Ranch, every day when he'd start, he would write how on the board, on the whiteboard. How. Honesty, open-mindedness, and willingness. I had none of it. At the beginning of How It Works, we read it tonight. It says, if you've decided you want what we have and are willing to go at any length to get it, then you're ready to take certain steps. I didn't know you guys had anything, to be honest. I certainly wasn't willing to go to any length to get nothing that you had. And I, you know, willingness, I don't even know what that is, right? So I wasn't ready to take certain steps is my point. So I guess, like, if you haven't decided you want what we have and you're not willing to go to any length to get it, you're probably not ready to take certain steps. I'll tell you what made me willing. Crawling through the bushes, that's what made me willing. Thinking the helicopters were out to get me. Like, I'm literally hiding in the bushes. I have my phone. I lost a shoe. Like, I guess I took my shirt off. I get hot. But the helicopters are circling. I'm pretty sure they've got, like, heat vision, like, technology to where they could see me hiding in the bushes at night. So I'm, like, hiding my phone because I figured they could see the light from my phone. I'm like, Mom, I'm in the bushes. Help. Help. Mom, help me. Come get me. She comes and get me. I crawl out of the bushes, right? That's when she took me to the Freedom Ranch, actually. I was not an alcoholic, and I was never going to be an alcoholic. My problem was not alcohol. So what? The first time I got sober, I got 60 days on 3 steps. Step one was like, all right, whatever. Step two was like, yeah, I believe, no problem. Step three, me and my father got on our knees, and we said the 3rd step prayer. And the book says, an effect, sometimes a very great one, is felt at once. And boy, did I feel it, man. I felt like, this is awesome. Like, I'm going to get my wife back. I'm going to get my kids back. I couldn't go within 100 yards of my family. That was 2 court orders, one from her, one from the county, because I was a nutcase. I was a nutcase. I'd gotten my freedom taken away several times. I'd been beaten up plenty of times, like, stabbed, shot, like, yeah. I'm not a gangster. I shot myself, just so you guys know. I know what you're thinking. It's fine. I shot myself. Don't worry about it. Now, when I first got sober that first time, Bernie was taking me to NA meetings, and can I say that? I'm just kidding. And I would tell it like that. I'd be like, man, I've been locked up. I've been stabbed. I've been shot. And after a while, after a meeting, I remember Bernie was like, you know what, Lawrence, like, your story's fine the way it is. And I was like, what do you mean? He's like, you can tell people you shot yourself. Okay. Cool. I'm not going to tell that story. That's a funny story. I'm not going to tell it, though. I told that story. I told you I brought my son to meetings for a minute, and I told that story at one of the meetings. He was there. And after the meeting, he was like, "Dad, you shouldn't tell that story anymore. Don't tell that story." Yeah. Things are funny to us. They're not funny to other people, man. Especially if they lived through it. That was crazy. But so I'm sitting in class at the Freedom Ranch every day, not listening, drawing. So like, went to college for art. So like an artist or whatever. And so like, I'm like, "You don't understand, bro. I'm gonna get my art career going after this. Like, I'm doing big things, right?" So I'm in class drawing. He's reading the book, like literally. If you are seriously as alcoholic as we were, we believe there is no middle of the road solution. I'm like, "Whatever, dude," right? But this is how God works. Like, you know, it just so happens, like, I've been thinking about this moment the entire time I've been sober, like getting to speak at South Bay Pioneers, right? And it just so happens they asked me like the day before my eighth birthday, right? And just like that, like, you know what I mean? Like, God is like that. And just like that, one day I'm in class and Mike, the head facilitator, comes in and he's like, "New rule, no more drawing. Put your drawing away now. No more drawing in class. Lawrence, put your drawing away." And I'm like, "Ugh. All right." So I'm drawing in my sketchbook, right? I'm so spoiled, you guys. Like, my parents bring me all my art supplies, tons of food. Like, you know, dude, I got it all. Like, when I'm in jail, I just tons of stores, man. Like, everybody wants to be my friend. You know, it's not because I'm cool. It's because my parents spoil me. I'm that guy. Like, and it's all their fault, too, by the way. Like, you know what I mean? Just what is your problem, dude? You know what I mean? Ay, ay, ay. So, no more drawing. Put your drawings away. This is exactly how it happened. I reached down. Put my sketchbook down, I stand up, and John goes, "But what about the real alcoholic? He may start off as a moderate drinker, he may or may not become a continuous hard drinker, but at some stage of his drinking career, he begins to lose all control of his liquor consumption once he starts to drink." And when I heard that, something happened. I immediately flash back to the first time I drank. I'm 12 years old, I'm like staying the night at my friend Aaron's house, right? This guy's also my age. He's a little bit older than me. I think he's like almost 14. Full beard, like crazy. Like, this dude's a genetic freak. Like, 6'1", just, he's already a man at 14. Like, so he can buy his beer, like, with no problem. He's been, like, trying to get me to drink with him and smoke with him and do all the things. And I'm just like, "No, you don't understand, bro. I can't. Just gotta say no. Like, no." Like, I've been saying no for a long time. Like, you know, I was raised in Al-Anon or Alateen. You know, like at 7, they're like, "You're sick. Your parents are sick and you're sick." And I'm like, "Fuck, what? Dude, I'm 7. Oh no, this is awful, right? You have alcoholism." And I'm like, "Okay, don't ever drink. Okay, just say no. Okay." But you know, I don't know what happened. Just like, I just got sick of saying no. And I was like, "All right, cool. Like, F it. That's why I drink," right? I found out why. After doing the work at the Freedom Ranch and like doing many inventories over the years, I know why I drink now. It's not because of all those things I thought. It's because, F it, let's go. I don't care. That's why I drink, because I don't care. I care about me. I like the effect that it produces. Even when I don't like the effect it produces, I still do it, right? Some people say nowadays, you hear it a lot, like, "Drinking wasn't my problem, drinking was my solution." Okay, but like, I drank even when I didn't need a solution. I still drank. Everything was fine. Everything was great. Not a cloud on the horizon. You know what I mean? And I still drank. So I don't know about that one. But anyway, so I'm sitting in class. I sit up. I hear that. I start flashing back. 13 years old, I guess. We sneak out of Aaron's house. He buys us 240s of King Cobra. Yeah, malt liquor, baby. Let's go. Yeah. Paper bag, because I don't know. Like, it's like, you know, midnight in a park. And I'm like, you know, with a 40-ounce in a paper bag. What? I don't know. I saw it like in the movies or whatever. And so like we'd been in that park before. This is Walnut Creek, California, Northern California, where I grew up. And so like up there, they're like called Norteños or whatever. It's just like kind of rough, like not cool. But we got jumped in that same park like a few weeks earlier. So like we're hiding behind like the dumpster, like drinking, like, you know, hoping these guys don't show up. And I'm just like scared out of my mind, right? I get about halfway down that 40 and I'm like, man, I wish they would show up right now. Matter of fact, this is my park. I mean, that's what alcohol did for me that first time I drank. It turned my life into a rap video. It made me like, not just liquid courage. I mean, I was bad, man. Like, it made me bad. You know what I'm saying? You know what I'm saying, Dad. Like, what's up now? What's up now? Dude, I've gotten into so much trouble. Just from that moment, that first night, drugs and alcohol ruined my life over and over and over and over and over, dude. I started overdosing immediately. I started like hurting my friends, like just smashed immediately. I started losing my whole group of friends, just gone. So many times. I had to make all new friends. And I'm not good at that. You guys know that. I'm sorry. Did I say that? I'm sorry. I love you guys. Anyway, and he continues, right? So I'm getting like flashbacks of my life, the truth about my drinking. I mean, he read all this, right? I know he read the doctor's opinion. We get to a certain point at the Freedom Ranch, and then we go back and we start over, right? So at this point, I wasn't paying attention. I don't really know too much about like the doctor's opinion, the allergy, right? But we're in, there is a solution. So this was just a few weeks like since I've been there. And he continued, and I heard him say, here's the fellow who has been puzzling you, especially in his lack of control. He does absurd, incredible, tragic things while drinking. He is a real Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. And when I heard that, step one hit me like a ton of bricks. As soon as I heard Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, I became an alcoholic. Sitting there in the Freedom Ranch with 50 other guys, right? Not an alcoholic my entire life. After hearing that, it dropped on me. Step one dropped on me, and it wasn't cool, dude. I was like, oh no. This is awful. Are you serious? He is seldom mildly intoxicated. He is always more or less insanely drunk. Oh no. The only thing that the biggest limiting factor to my progression of alcoholism when I was that young was the availability of alcohol. That was my saving grace. It was just, there wasn't enough ever. But those moments, those nights where there was enough, it wasn't good. Every time there was enough, it was bad. I remember several times I would like call my mom the next day and I'd be like, Mom, I think I cracked a rib throwing up last night. I need to see a doctor. And she's like, Lawrence, I think you might be allergic to alcohol. And I'm like, that's the dumbest thing I've ever heard. What are you talking about, Ma? I'm fine. Anyway. His disposition while drinking resembles his normal nature, but little. He may be one of the finest fellows in the world. I relate to that part. I don't know. But let him drink for a day. And he frequently, I lost my place, but I have this part memorized. He frequently becomes disgustingly and dangerously antisocial. Now that last part, dangerously antisocial part. So I mentioned to you guys that like I was very unwilling to see the truth about my drinking, but I was somewhat willing to accept the fact that I was an addict, right? And so what happened was I was at the height of my life. I had a beautiful wife, three amazing kids. I was living in a beautiful house in Chula Vista, Mercedes in the driveway, six-figure career. I started a solar company here in San Diego. Like, we were killing it. And I'm driving around San Diego, and suddenly the thought occurred to me that if I started smoking meth, I could fix my marriage, lose a bunch of weight, and sell a bunch of solar. I can't say it any more truthfully than that. I'm being real with you guys. That was the thought I had out of nowhere. Out of nowhere. And just in a short amount of time, I could not go within 100 yards of my family. And I've seen... I still can't get it out of my head. So what led me into the bushes was I wanted to get sober. I wanted to stop. Is that my time already? No, dude, I got 15 minutes. I wanted to stop and I couldn't. That's what got me to the Freedom Ranch. I wanted to stop and I couldn't. That was it. Before then, I could stop if I wanted to. Like, you know, this is nothing. You know what I mean? But when I finally wanted to stop and couldn't, that was my bottom. That was the loneliness such as few know. That was the jumping off place. That's when I wished for the end. When I could not imagine my life either with alcohol or without it, right? That's the real bottom. Those are the sharp rocks at the bottom. When you want to stop and you can't. I wanted to stop and I couldn't. That whole time before then to that moment, I thought this was me. Like, this is what I choose. This is just how I get down. So that's what led me to the Freedom Ranch. So step one hit me like a ton of bricks. That was shocking. So I figured, okay, what else you got, right? So then I started paying attention. God opened my mind. He opened my mind. I couldn't be dishonest to myself. I wasn't willing to be honest, but I certainly couldn't be dishonest to that level anymore. Right? How? Honesty, open-mindedness, and willingness. So honesty started to happen to me. My mind started to open because this book was telling me about myself. The man was literally reading from it, and he was like, Lawrence, you're often perfectly sensible and well-balanced concerning everything except liquor, but in that respect, you're incredibly dishonest and selfish. And I was like, oh, damn. And so I seen guys doing their writing, and I'm like, what is that, man? What are you writing? And he's like, oh, this is my step work, just page after page after page. And I was like, what step is that? Is that your fourth step? And they're like, no, this is my first step. And I was like, oh, no. I have to write about all that? And so my dad, he was coming and visiting me, and I'm like, Dad, these guys are writing all this stuff about step one. I never did that before. Do I have to do that? And he's like, no. I got you to step three. You're not getting off that easy. You pick that ball up where you dropped it. You write that inventory. And I was like, okay, cool. I didn't write it. I mean, I'm not willing yet. Still not willing. That's weird. That's alcoholism. That's that insanity. That's like how it, cunning, baffling, and powerful. That's that cunning part. Like, I'm like an alcoholic finally. Like, starting to see the truth about, like, who I've been my whole life. And I'm still not willing to do anything about it. So one night, my mom comes up to visit us. And she's like, you know, my family's hardcore. Some of you guys know my parents. They're hardcore. It's like, you know, very simple questions. What step are you on? You know, what are you and God like? Like, you know what I mean? What step, you know, she's like, how's the inventory coming? I'm like, nah. I'm not doing it. And she's like, she looked at me and she goes, just effing do it, Lawrence. And like, my mom does not cuss, I gotta tell you. Like, she doesn't cuss. So the fact that she said that word to me at that moment, heard my mom cuss like one or two times in my life. So hearing her say that, I was like, okay, cool. So I stayed up that night till like 4 a.m. and I busted it out. I banged out my inventory. Bernie came up to the Freedom Ranch. We did a fifth step. And I've been hearing guys go up to the podium after their fist up. There's a guy up there called Big Book Rich. And his job was to hear guys' fist steps. And every time they were done, they'd go up to the podium afterwards and they'd be like, man, I got this weight lifted off my shoulders. I feel so great now. This is amazing. I did my fifth step with Big Book Rich. This is no big deal. And I got to tell you, my experience was not like that. Seeing the truth about myself written in my own handwriting and then hearing myself talk about how incredibly like selfish and dishonest. If you had told me before, Lawrence, you don't care about your kids, we would have had a problem. But at that moment, I realized like, oh, she was right. And as we finished, we did it up a place called God's Rock. It's like this rock with this big white cross, and that's like kind of where we were. And I read it to him, and then as we were walking down, we were finished, and we were walking down, my sister popped into my head. Like just the purest, like cleanest thought, my sister. And it was just incredible because like she was not on my inventory. She's an amazing sister. She's always taking care of me, always. And suddenly she popped into my head and I realized that she lived in the same house. She grew up in the same house I did. She's 4 years older than me for longer and saw the same things that I saw for longer. And she never once used it as an excuse to destroy her life and hurt the people she loved with drugs and alcohol. And all those lies that I told myself just were gone. I believe that my spiritual experience started with rehearing this description of the real alcoholic out of the book. But that moment was kind of like the real spearhead of it. It really picked up momentum at that moment because I realized that all those things that I thought about myself were not true. Some of us tried to hold on to our old ideas and the result was nil until we let go. Absolutely, right? What I found is that the hardest ideas to let go of were the ones I have about myself because I really believe that. So, I suffered at the Freedom Ranch, man. Like, I got really sick. I tore my shoulder trying to, like, ego lift at the weight pile. Like, I couldn't sleep because of that. There was a guy in my room that, like, had sleep apnea. And, like, I already couldn't sleep because of my shoulder and because I was sick. And, like, this guy, like, he would, like, snore, like, and then he would stop. And I just like fall asleep. And I'm like, what is that going on? So Bernie comes and my dad actually, sorry, Bernie, my dad came and, you know, because Bernie was like, cool, fist step's done, you're good, later. My dad came back. He's like, no, wait. We go home, we take the book down from the shelf, we turn to the page which contains the 12 steps. Right, ask ourselves these questions. Have I omitted anything, right? Have I tried to make mortar without sand, right? Have I skimped on cement in the foundation? And we answer to our satisfaction, and then we look at 6 and 7. And then when ready, we say something like this. My creator, I'm now willing that you should have all of me, good and bad. I pray that you now remove every single defect of character which stands in the way of my usefulness to you and my fellows. Grant me strength as I go out from here to do your bidding. Amen. So I said the prayer. And so, like, to me, this is like spiritual surgery. And God is the surgeon. He holds a scalpel. And I have these things that I know about now that I've been carrying around inside myself. Because deep down in every man, woman, and child is the fundamental idea of God, right? It may be obscured by pomp, which is like arrogance. I had to look that one up. By calamity, which is like sudden, bad, tragic things that happen, right? By worship of other things. Matt, I know you know what that is, right? But some form or other, it is there. And in the last analysis, it is only there that he may be found. It was so with us, right? So Bernie told me, he's like, man, God lives inside you. God's a flame. God is a fire inside of you, deep down inside of you. And it's been put out, man. You're blocked off, man. All those things that I carried around inside of me. And now I know exactly what it is, what it really is though, right? Like, we talk a lot about like the the allergy, the physical allergy. We talk a lot about like the obsession, the mental part of it. But you know, we don't talk a ton about like the spiritual side of the disease. And a spoiler alert, it's selfishness. It's selfishness and self-centeredness. I don't care about any of you. I don't care about you. I don't care about my family. That's gnarly. I love them. They're everything to me. I remember at one point I was like, hadn't slept in days. And my mom looked at me and she was like, Lawrence, you've lost your joy. Those things that used to bring you joy, your kids, are nothing to you now. You have no joy. So I said the prayer. And I meant it. I meant it. And I went to sleep. I had a beautiful night's sleep, man. First good night's sleep in, I don't know, years. And I woke up the next morning, and right away, as soon as I opened my eyes, I knew something was different. I knew something had changed. I'd grown up believing in God. Like, my parents got sober when I was 7, raised on the Serenity Prayer. They taught me that when God speaks to you, he can hear you. And if you feel like he's not going to help you, then make him bigger. Also, I was raised Catholic. And I didn't have some of the experience that I know some of us have, like, with that. Like, I loved it. When my grandparents took me to Catholic church, I thought I felt God's presence. Like, I thought it was beautiful. I loved it, right? And it was like I could feel him again. I hadn't felt him in so long. And it's like I could feel him again. And as I got up and, you know, I got dressed and, you know, that feeling that something was different intensified. And as I stepped outside, immediately I was like, whoa, somebody slipped me acid. Like, this is not right. Like, all the colors were super bright. Like, it was like I was frying. I swear to God. It was, my vision was different. Like, I'd been losing my vision steadily for a few years, and by the time I got to the Freedom Ranch, couldn't really read the board very well, but I sat down in my seat that day in class, I could see everything. It was the strangest thing, and I was, like, hyper aware of things, too. I felt so optimistic, and it was almost like I had a voice inside my head that was like, you're gonna be all right now. You're gonna be fine. She's going to be fine. They're going to be fine. Everything's going to be okay. You're going to be able to do this now. Promise. And I was like, yes. That obsession that I woke up with for so long, every day for so long. I remember like waking up and like if I had a little bit left, it was like I'd wake up like with a smile. Just like that first thought that wakes you up in the morning like, oh, yeah, it's going to be a good day. Just sick. Like, how sick. Like, I have this beautiful family, and that's my first thought? Like, I got a little bit left? Like, there's some liquor still in the bottle? What? But that was replaced that day because that obsession was gone. And when you wake up with something every day for so long, and then you wake up one day, and it's not there, you know it's not there. My obsession was removed that day. I woke up, and it was gone. And it hasn't returned. In 8 years. And I'll tell you, like, I know that's not everybody's experience, but if that had not happened, I would not be here. I need a miracle. I need a continued, expansive spiritual experience on a daily basis, right? I read the book. I come to meetings. When AA asked me to do something, I say yes. My sponsor used to tell me from day one, commitments are not convenient. And I have to agree with that now. I met my fiance in these rooms. I was in a meeting Saturday noon meeting at PB. And she got called on the share and she walked up to the podium and I was like, damn. I was like, it was with my two sponsees. I was like, that one's mine. Yeah. Yeah, and God does show you signs, man. She had a bag on her shoulder that said San Francisco on it. That's, like, where I'm from. She's from the Bay Area, too, right? But when I started talking to her, I got her number. You know, see if she wanted to go to a meeting. Calm down, everybody. And she's like, well, I got 3 months. And I'm like, oh, no. I think I had, like, 5 years at the time. I'm like, all right, well, you know, do you mind if I ask you like about God? Like, what, you know, what's your conception of God? I feel like it's a fair question. And she started talking about like the universe and energy, and I was like, oh. Which is fine, dude, that's totally cool. Like, but what I know is that when you start getting into the work, like sometimes that conception grows and it changes and it alters and it gets bigger, right? And so like I realized that she was still at an early stage in her journey. So I left her alone because I have 5 years of like hardcore AA, right? I've been in relationships and it's not gone terrible, it hasn't gone great, right? But I've done the inventory afterwards, so I know the truth about that now too, right? That's how I find the truth out about myself and my motives. As I do inventory, just like it says in this book, right? And I knew that if I, you know, overreach my grasp and I kind of like self-will this, it could be bad for her and me. So I left her alone. But God brought her back into my life a little bit later, and she was like talking about this personal God to her that like took away her obsession. And I was like, want to go to lunch? God has been so good to me, and you guys have been so good to me. If I worked every day for the rest of my life and I lived to be 1,000 years, I could never repay you. So thanks for letting me share.
We'd like to thank our speaker tonight, Lawrence. Come back and visit us soon. We would also like to thank the residents of the house and the Women's Auxiliary for a fantastic dinner. We will now close in the usual manner with a prayer of the speaker's choice. Lawrence, can you lead us out in prayer?
I swag my boy pretty good, huh?
Yeah.
Thank you, God.
Yeah. Walnut Creek. My daughter lives in Orinda.
Oh. Orinda. We should do a...